Picture this. You're cruising at 3,500 feet over farmland, maybe 40 miles from your home airport. The engine is running smooth, the weather is clear, and you're thinking about lunch. Then the engine coughs, once, twice, and then it quits. What happens next in the first 30 seconds will determine whether you walk away from that field or don't. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, here on Radio Hangar, and today we're walking through the engine-out forced landing from the moment of silence to touchdown. Before we get into it, a quick shout-out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the aviation journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. Now, let's talk about what happens when the engine quits. Engine-out forced landings are one of the defining skills of private pilot training, and the airman certification standards are very clear about what the examiner expects. But the checkride version and the real version share more in common than most pilots realize. The fundamentals are exactly the same. The stakes are just higher when there's no examiner reaching for the throttle. The moment the engine quits, your first instinct is to try to fix it. That's human. But the very first thing you need to do before the checklist, before the radio, before anything else, is establish best glide speed. Best glide is the airspeed that gives you the most horizontal distance for the altitude you're losing. In a Cessna 172, that's about 65 knots, in a Piper Cherokee, around 75. You need to know this number cold for whatever aircraft you fly, because every second you spend at the wrong airspeed is altitude you're giving away for nothing. Here's something that trips people up. If you're slow when the engine quits, you need to lower the nose to get there. That feels wrong when you're already losing power. But a nose-high attitude with a windmilling prop is not your friend. Get to best glide, then think, now. Where are you going? Field selection is a skill that takes time to develop, and the best pilots I've flown with are constantly scanning the terrain below them, even when the engine is running fine. That awareness becomes automatic. You're not worried. You're just noticing. Flat field off the left. Power lines along that road. Long gravel driveway near that farmhouse. Good. When the engine quits, you've already been doing that work. You're not starting from scratch. The airman certification standards say the private pilot applicant should be able to select a suitable landing area within gliding distance. That word suitable does a lot of heavy lifting. Let's break down what you're actually looking for. Size comes first. You need enough room to land and then some. A postage stamp field with perfect grass but only 800 feet of length is not your best option if there's a bigger field just to the left. Think about how much runway you need under normal conditions, then add a margin for the fact that this approach will not be normal. Surface is next. Mowed grass is ideal. Harvested grain fields can work well. Standing corn will stop you very fast and very badly. Plowed fields can flip a nosewheel aircraft. Marshland looks flat from altitude and will swallow your wheels. Slope matters too. A slight upslope helps you stop. A downslope means more rollout than you planned. Wind direction, you want to land into the wind. You probably know the wind from your weather briefing. Look at smoke, water ripples, crop movement if you can see it. A 10-knot tailwind does not sound like much on a normal day. On an off-airport landing with no go-around option, it changes everything. Obstacles. Power lines are the silent killer in forced landing accidents. They're nearly impossible to see from above, and they are everywhere, along roads, along field edges, between poles you might not even notice until you're on short final. Wire strikes are sometimes survivable in slow aircraft. But you want to plan your approach so that you're arriving over an open edge of the field, not over the road that runs along the boundary. Proximity to help? All else being equal, land near a road or a farmhouse. Somewhere a person can find you. Okay, you've got your field, you're at best glide. Now we talk about the key position. The key position concept is one of the most important things in private pilot training, and it's not complicated once you understand the logic. Think of it this way: when you fly a normal traffic pattern, you have a known altitude at each checkpoint. Downwind abeam the numbers, base turn final. You've done hundreds of those. You intuitively know whether you're high, low, or just right. The forced landing pattern works the same way, but you build it around one reference point. Approximately 1,000 feet above ground level, position to beam your intended touchdown point, set up to make a final approach. That's the key position. If you can get there, you can make the field. 1,000 feet above the ground gives you enough altitude to fly a reasonable base and final. You have options if your energy is a little high. You can slip, extend, adjust. It's not a lot of margin, but it's workable. Getting to the key position is the art of it. If you're at 3,500 feet when the engine quits and your field is roughly below you, you have about 2,500 feet of altitude to burn before you need to be at the key position. That takes some management. Here's where student pilots often make the first big mistake. They head straight for the field at best glide and arrive overhead way too high. Then they don't know what to do. They try to circle down, lose track of the field. The approach geometry falls apart. The move is to think ahead. If you're high, use that altitude, strategically plan an extended downwind leg. Do a 360 clearing turn to lose altitude while staying oriented to the field, but stay organized, don't spiral randomly and hope it works out. You want to arrive at the key position? Beam your touchdown point 1,000 feet above the ground, and then execute a recognizable pattern from there. Different aircraft glide differently. The Cessna 172 at best glide will cover roughly 1.5 miles per 1,000 feet. A Piper Archer is similar. A Mooney glides farther. Know your aircraft's glide ratio and do rough math as you're descending. Now, when do you attempt a restart? The emergency checklist exists for exactly this moment. Fuel selector to both or fullest tank, mixture to rich, throttle a small amount of movement, primer in and locked, ignition, check both mags, fuel pump on if equipped, carb heat on. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. You don't have to choose between the checklist and field selection. You run them together. Establish best glide, pick your field. Then work the checklist while you're descending and managing energy toward the key position. These are not sequential steps. They're parallel tracks. The checklist should take you maybe 30 seconds to run through. If the engine comes back, great. If not, you've given it a reasonable chance and now you focus entirely on getting down safely. When do you work the radio? Squawk 7700. That's the emergency transponder code. If you have time and a free hand, try a call on 121.5 or your current frequency. Something like Mayday, 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 Cessna November 12345. Engine failure, 5 miles southwest of Fayette, forced landing, 3 souls on board. Short, clear, information that helps someone find you. Here's the honest truth about the radio call. If you're high and stable, and the field is right there, make the call. If you're low and the workload is high, fly the airplane first. An emergency transponder squawk with no voice call still tells radar that something is wrong. They will look for you. Okay, you're at the key position. Checklist done, field selected. Turn to base when your touchdown zone is about 45 degrees behind you. Same as a normal pattern. Keep in mind you have no engine, so every altitude decision from here is a one-way door. You can always lose altitude. You cannot make more of it. If you're high on final, slip. A forward slip in a Cessna 172 can dramatically increase your descent rate without building airspeed. This is one of the most underrated emergency skills in the toolkit. It's also why instructors get nervous when students never practice slips. You need that tool working when it matters. If you're low, it's harder. You can reduce drag, you can cut the base turn short. But if you're genuinely going to fall short of the field, it is far better to recognize that and pick the next best option than to push the nose down, chase airspeed, and try to stretch the glide. Stretching the glide is how pilots end up in the trees just before the field boundary. The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Check Ride ask the applicant to touch down within 300 feet beyond a designated point, with no floating or skipping. In the real scenario, the standard is simpler. Get to the field, get it on the ground, walk away. But training to the ACS precision builds the habit that keeps you safe when there's no examiner watching. On short final, carry maybe 5 knots above your normal approach speed. Not a lot, you're not trying to float. You want a firm arrival and a short rollout, especially in rough terrain flaps. This is one of the judgment calls that changes based on altitude. If you're high and stable with plenty of margin, go ahead and use full flaps for the shortest possible rollout. If you're low and uncertain, hold the flaps until you're sure. Flaps increase lift, but they dramatically increase drag. Dropping full flaps when you're marginal can turn a made landing into a fence impact. Before touchdown, if there's time, secure the aircraft. Fuel selector off. Mixture to idle cutoff. Magnetos off, master switch off, door slightly ajar so it doesn't jam on impact, seat belts as tight as they'll go, land at the slowest possible speed while still maintaining aircraft control. Now let's talk about the accident patterns that come up again and again in engine out scenarios. The biggest one by a wide margin is inadequate airspeed management. Pilots slow below best glide trying to stretch the glide, stall, and impact the terrain before ever reaching the field they were aiming for. Best glide is best glide. It is not a suggestion. Going slower does not help you go farther. The performance polar doesn't lie. The second pattern is fixation on an unworkable field. A pilot picks the first field they see, commits to it mentally, and ignores a clearly better option visible a mile to the left 30 seconds later. Stay adaptable as long as you have altitude to work with. Once you're below about 500 feet, commit to what you have and fly it. The third is failing to use the slip. A pilot arrives on final high, tries to manage with S-turns, ends up floating halfway down the field, runs out of room, hits the fence. Learn to slip. Practice it on every training flight. The fourth is overworking the restart and underworking the field selection. One thorough pass through the emergency checklist is appropriate. Maybe two if you have altitude and time. But pilots who keep cycling through the checklist looking for a miracle sometimes arrive at 300 feet with no field picked and no plan. Here's what I want you to carry with you. The forced landing is survivable. This is not a death sentence. Aircraft are designed to protect occupants in controlled crashes. The pilots who die in engine failure accidents are almost never killed by the engine failure itself. They die from loss of control while trying to return to the airport, from terrain impact after stalling below best glide, or from wire strikes on final. The pilots who walk away are the ones who immediately put the nose where it belongs, pick a reasonable field, and fly a disciplined approach to the ground. Practice this. Get your instructor to pull the throttle on you at altitude, not just once during training, but regularly. The real surprise of an engine failure cannot be simulated, but the procedure can become automatic with repetition. Go fly over the terrain you commonly fly over and actually look at it. Where are the fields? Where are the power lines? Where would you go right now if the engine quit? That exercise, done honestly on every cross-country, builds the situational awareness that makes field selection fast when you need it most. Brief your passengers before longer flights, nothing scary. Just, if anything unexpected happens, grab your phone and call 911. We're flying toward destination over area. That kind of pre-brief has made a real difference in real accidents. Fly the airplane, pick a field, work the checklist, declare land. In that order. Everything else is practice. The FAA Airplane Flying Handbook covers emergency procedures thoroughly in its own chapter, and it's free on the FAA website. The AOPA Air Safety Institute has published accident analysis on engine failures that is worth reading before your next flight. Your aircraft's pilot's operating handbook has emergency procedures written specifically for what you're flying. Know that section cold, more at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. The field is always there, you just have to be looking for it.